This is the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome to Finding Hope on the EWN Radio Network with Counselor Mandy Epley, where you will learn practical tools for navigating your losses and hear inspiring real-life stories from courageous people who have moved through their losses and found hope. And now, your host, Counselor Mandy.
Welcome to Finding Hope. I'm your host, Counselor Mandy Epley, and I am ecstatically happy that today I'm interviewing an incredible man and leader on our planet, Andrew Harvey. Andrew, hi there.
Lovely to be with you. Hooray.
I'm so excited to speak with you today. And as always, I want to thank my producer and dear friend who makes all this come together, Cindy Bolero. Hey, Cindy.
Hey there.
And Cindy, will you do the honors and introduce our guest?
I am happy to do that today. Andrew Harvey is an internationally acclaimed poet, novelist, translator, mystical scholar, and spiritual teacher. Andrew has published over 20 books, including The Hope, A Guide to Sacred Activism, and his newest book, Radical Passion, Sacred Love and Wisdom in Action. Andrew is a fellow of All Souls College, Oxford, from 1972 to 1986, and has taught at Oxford University, Cornell University, the California Institute of Integral Studies, and the University of Creation Spirituality, as well as various spiritual centers throughout the United States. He was the subject of the 1993 BBC film documentary, The Making of a Modern Mystic. He is also the founder of the Institute for Sacred Activism, and we are so thrilled that Andrew's here with us today. Welcome.
Thank you, Cindy. My favorite singer, by the way. So, I wish you could
thank
sing
you.
For us. So, friends, I want you all to be introduced to Andrew Harvey and to his work in the world. For those of you that aren't aware about what Andrew is doing in the world, one of the best ways to learn about Andrew and his passion for human beings, for animals, for our planet, is to buy his book, The Hope. I would love for you all to learn about his work. Andrew has inspired tens of thousands of people around the globe. So, Andrew, with what's happening in the world right now, I thought it would be really important in terms of finding hope that people hear about your heart, your ideas, your passions. And I think it's really amazing what's been happening in Paris, the talks that have been happening there. And I wanted to share in a dialogue with you for our listeners.
Well, thank you. And you know, everybody must now be aware that we are in a massive climate crisis. The overwhelming consensus of the scientists is that we are in environmental free fall and have to act on every level very fast. I was at Copenhagen in 2009, part of a group of spiritual teachers invited to address the UN, and it was a total disaster because everybody was playing games and nothing got done. And that experience was probably the most depressing experience of my life. I came back from Copenhagen feeling, my God, the world is completely incapable of dealing with a problem that potentially spells out the possible extinction of the human race and of a great deal of nature. But the courage of President Obama has really made possible an extraordinary initial deal in Paris, and this is a very, very important moment in the history of the planet. The deal is not perfect. For example, there is no commitment to a carbon tax, which would inevitably force a massive increase in renewable energy, and we still don't know how the deal is going to be implemented. But the fact that nearly 190 nations could come together and face the facts at last is so thrilling that I think we should all fall on our knees and thank the mother that we live in such moment. But I want to read to you just something that I think goes to the core of what now needs to be done. And it's written by the great environmentalist Bill McKibben, and it says exactly what I feel about both the great possibilities that are opened up and the great responsibility that everyone in the world, whatever their political affiliations, now need to take up. This is what he says. That we have any agreement at all, of course, is testament to the mighty movement that activists around the world have built over the last 5 years. At Copenhagen, world leaders could go home with nothing and pay no price. But that, thank God, is no longer true. But what this means is that we need to build the movement even bigger in the coming years so that the Paris Agreement turns into a floor and not a ceiling for action. We'll be blocking pipelines, fighting new coal mines, trying divestment, urging divestment from fossil fuels, trying, in short, to keep weakening the mighty industry that still stands in the way of real progress. With every major world leader now on the record saying they at least theoretically support bold action to make the transition to renewable energy, we've got a new tool to work with. And we'll try to keep hoping that it adds up fast enough to matter. That's a little hard as the hottest year ever measured draws to a close. One doesn't want to rain on the Paris parade, but that's what seems to be happening somewhere every day now. In other words, what we have to do is, on the one hand, celebrate this amazing moment, celebrate Obama's courage, celebrate the Chinese premier's courage, celebrate the hard-nosed brilliance of the Parisian hosts, celebrate Kerry's tireless work, celebrate the agreement, but we've got to be aware that what's needed is a continuing pressure from everyone all over the world to ensure that governments everywhere really honor this agreement, to ensure that it's actually solidified in a carbon tax, and to ensure that as much as possible is done everywhere to turn the world to renewable sources of energy. What's amazing at this moment is that all the different forms of renewable energy are now very much cheaper than they were even 5 years ago. There's been an 80% cut in the expense of solar energy, which makes solar energy cheaper than burning coal. There have been fantastic reductions and fantastic improvements in wind energy. The future of the planet depends on this. Perhaps the most depressing thing about living in America, and you know how much I love America, you know how much I love the American spirit and the energy and the passion of this country, but the thing that nearly drives me nuts is the massive denial on behalf of many people and many important politicians in the Republican Party, including, of course, Trump. This is insanity. And it's insanity even from a Republican point of view, because if America chooses to pour massive resources into inventing new forms of renewable energy and into pioneering cheaper forms even of renewable energy and really leads the way, that could be an enormous new source of economic domination and wealth for America. We have to move on this. So rejoice at Paris, but get going. The work remains to be done, but we have a door, at least, open onto amazing possibility. And I am praying up a storm and haranguing the mother and begging the angels and talking wherever I can to really alert people to the miraculous possibility, to the danger, and to the necessity of turning up and making our passion for the world vocal. Everybody has a stake in the future of the environment. Everybody must realize that we've come to a threshold moment in human evolution, and everyone must take up the challenge of this time and not just think about the environment, not just mourn the pain that's happened, the horror, the destruction, but realize that now, with this agreement in place, we have a massive opportunity to make our voices felt all over the world.
One of the things that's so meaningful to me about your work, Andrew, is that you encourage the individual, the everyday human being. You know, you're encouraging everyone that you meet, wherever you live, whatever your status is in life, whatever your sexuality is, whatever your issues are, whoever you are, that you can play your part. And for me, why that touches me so deeply is that my work is about working with the brokenhearted, working with people who are grieving deeply, who have had great losses. And it's people that have had great loss who better to serve the world, friends, than those of us, which is really all of us, who have had great grief in our lives, because we're the ones that become awakened through the cuts and the wounds into our passion to serve. And what a remarkable time to live in history at this threshold, at this time where what you do in your community at any level for the environment and to taking action and writing your senator and writing your congressman and doing your part in whatever way you can, doing your blogging, doing your writing, showing up to support the activist, how that all makes a difference and gives great meaning to your losses.
Absolutely. It's been my experience, Mandy, that heartbreak is the greatest divine gift. That when your heart is shattered, you're given really a choice. Are you going to crumble and be paralyzed, or are you going to take this as a great mystery which will deepen you and initiate you, if you let it, into a strength and a purpose and a meaning far greater than anything you may ever have glimpsed before? So what I say to people who always ask me as I travel the world speaking about sacred activism, which is the fusion of deep spiritual intelligence and passion and peace and passion and engagement with the world with radical action, what I say to them when they ask me, what should I do? I say, get up at 3 o'clock in the morning. Surround yourself by the peace of God, by whatever name you worship God, and then ask yourself one question. What of all the causes in the world breaks my heart the most? That is the cause that you are called by destiny to do something real about in your real circumstances. And there is no more important cause at this moment than the cause of preserving our environment, because without a healthy environment, the human race is doomed. And there are many scientists who are not flakes, who don't wear grass skirts and have Sanskrit names, who really do believe that we may very well have already passed the danger point. I hold up the strong hope that this is not so, but we can only make it not so if we allow ourselves, all of us, to experience in the depths of ourselves the heartbreak that we will experience when we face what is happening in the Amazon, the burning of the Amazon, what's happening in the seas, the pollution of the seas that recent research suggests will be empty of fish in 2045, which means that in just over 30 years, there'll be no fish in the sea. We have to feel at the deepest level the pain of this, the sorrow, the incredible grief, and even some of the guilt that we all share in being addicted to an unsustainable way of living that is costing every other creature and nature herself so much. But the most important thing that I've discovered in my own journey into heartbreak is that it's almost impossible to learn the great crucial lessons that heartbreak can teach you if you don't fortify yourself by spiritual practice, simple meditation, saying of the name of God in the heart. Because one of the reasons why people everywhere, and especially in this culture, which is so resolutely and sometimes very stupidly optimistic, why people everywhere are so frightened of heartbreak is that they feel that if they begin to allow themselves to feel the great grief for the destruction of nature by our insanely primitive society, they will just fall apart and be paralyzed. So you need to fortify yourself. You need to strengthen yourself. You need to cool down the inspiration of the divine so that you can experience part of your own divine nature with its strength and its spaciousness and its peace and its power, so that you can allow yourself to feel, knowing that you're not going to be shattered by it.
Mm. Friends, when we come back, we're going to be speaking with Andrew Moore. I want to talk with you about helping people understand more clearly about their own spiritual practices to fortify themselves. Stay with us. We'll be back.
I'm looking for a certain kind of woman, and I think you know her. She's an entrepreneur that is highly connected, successful, significant in her own industry, and considered the go-to woman in her community. She's received so much from so many women in business, she's ready to give back to others on their journey, lifting as she climbs. Hi, this is Sandra Yancey, and I'm the founder and CEO of eWomen Network. I'm looking to connect with the woman I've just described who lives in your community so that we might have a conversation about how eWomen Network's proven success system can provide her a platform to elevate her success and ability to support women in business. Our international community of managing directors are influencing the speed of success for women in business around the world. If that sounds like something that you want to be part of or know someone we should talk with, send an email to managingdirector@ewomennetwork.com. That's managingdirector@ewomennetwork.com, and let's start the conversation.
Friends of eWomen Network, I want to share with you two cutting-edge and soul-stirring books by author and visionary Chris Saadi. Both are highly recommended by a host of spiritual teachers such as Kate Sheehan Roach and Andrew Harvey. These books focus on the emergence of an evolutionary spiritual understanding, that is, the importance and the power of living authentically, freeing our authentic, unique self, and pursuing our calling from our authentic passion to serve freedom, peace, justice, and inclusion. These two books are Second Wave Spirituality and Prayers for Peace and Justice by Chris Saadi. S-A-A-D-E. Saadi is on Amazon.com and the olivebranchcenter.net.
Welcome back to Finding Hope. I am your host, Counselor Mandy Epley, and today I'm having the honor to speak with Andrew Harvey. Andrew and I were speaking about, before we went to break, about what's been going on in the environment and the world, about the Paris talks, and Andrew's great call to all of us to get into our action. And before we went to break, Andrew was talking about how important it is that we allow ourselves to feel our great heartbreak, and that so often in order to stay empowered in our heartbreak, well, we feel overwhelmed that we can't. And Andrew was encouraging us around simple spiritual practices. Will you say more about that, Andrew, for people that really want to understand what is it that can help them not be afraid of their heartbreak?
Well, the only thing that can help you not be afraid of your heartbreak is really coming to understand the depth and range and power of your divine heart. Because your divine heart can hold your broken human heart and infuse it, even as it breaks open, with courage and peace and passion and the resolution to act on what you discover. I would urge everybody listening to do three very simple forms of practice. My belief is that we're all born with a direct connection to the divine. We're all born with a spark of divine consciousness, and everyone, whether they know it or not consciously, is on a profound, hidden, mystical journey towards the great awakening to our divinity. Mm-hmm. And there are three practices that anybody, whatever their religion, can do. Mm-hmm. And really, these three practices, if you do them sincerely, will over time reveal to you that you're not only a human being caught in this overwhelming crisis, you are also a divine being who lives in timelessness and who feeds directly from the great, glorious joy and peace of the divine. The first practice is simple meditation. And if you do simple, imageless meditation for 20 minutes in the morning and 20 minutes at night, you'll find that within a month or so, you will be able to sense something that is absolutely life-saving, that there is living in you a calm, infinitely spacious, witnessing consciousness that when you get into contact with it, will prevent you from overreacting to whatever is arising in your life or in the world. It will give you a vantage point of serenity and calm and non-attachment, which paradoxically will make you much braver in how you confront what happens in your life and in the world, and much wiser, because instead of just reacting from fear or distress, you'll be able to see clearly the full shape of the experience, and you'll be guided by your own inner guru to react and act in ways that are healing and profoundly transformatory. This technique of simple meditation is known in all the great mystical traditions and is available to every single human being who has the guts to embrace it. So sit calmly with your back straight and imagine, as my great Tibetan teacher said, that you are a big lump of butter put out in the spring sunlight, and allow yourself to melt away, just to relax into the great open space of your essential being. You'll find that your monkey mind will dance and suggest all sorts of irrelevant thoughts, but if you just watch those thoughts like clouds going across the sky, the great sun of your real nature will make itself known to you. This is a promise, so try it. The second great practice that any human being can do, which is unanimously celebrated in all the mystical traditions, and is the practice that I myself do as often as possible during the day in whatever circumstances I find myself, is saying the name of God in the heart center. The heart center isn't the physical heart. It's slightly to the right of the chest. It's a psycho-spiritual chakra center, known again in all the mystical traditions. And if you just bow your head and tenderly and silently say in the core of your being that sacred name that you most identify with, it doesn't matter what the name is. You can be a Christian and say the name of Jesus. You can be a Muslim and say the name Allah. You can be a Buddhist and say the name of the Dalai Lama or the great mantra of Buddhism, Om Mani Padme Hum. You can be a Hindu and say Om Namah Shivaya. But you'll discover that if you start saying the name with deep attention, deep reverence, and adoration, what will happen is that the mirror of your heart will be cleaned, and you'll be purified, and your thoughts will subside. And over time, you may be great. Some very extraordinary experiences, and you may very well start to see the divine light, the light of divine consciousness that you are actually at this moment unified with. So this saying of the name of God is something, again, that anybody can do, and it is immensely powerful.
Yes.
The third practice that comes from the core of the ancient Hindu tradition, but has been made universal by perhaps the greatest teacher that the world has seen in the last 200 years, Sri Ramana Maharshi, is a very simple but enormously powerful practice that if you really use it and press it to its conclusion and work with it, will in the end open you to the great expanse of enlightenment. It's a practice that I myself have found astoundingly powerful. And what it is to simply ask yourself the question, who am I? It's called the vichara practice. And of course, at the beginning, you say, I'm Andrew Harvey, and I'm 63 years old, and I'm English, and etc. But of course, as you explore that, you realize that, no, you're not just this being with a biography set in these karmic circumstances. You go deeper and deeper and deeper until you open to a mystery. And that mystery, in the end, opens up to the supreme secret that you are not the body, you're not the mind, you're not your emotions, you're not your biography. They are part of you, but much, much more importantly, what you are fundamentally is nothing less than divine consciousness itself.
Yeah.
The great words in the Upanishads are Tat Tvam Asi, you are that. And it's this great secret that's waiting at the center and the core of every human being to be discovered. And what I've discovered, because through grace that has been my intimate discovery, what I've discovered is that when the amazing secret of being nothing less than divine consciousness in one's essential nature dawns on you, what dawns with it is a very vibrant, buoyant, dynamic serenity, a great compassion, and a great calm resolution to devote your whole life, your mind, your emotions, all the things that you are in this current world, to the work of justice and compassion. Those three practices are universal practices. They can be done in whatever religion you find yourself, and they work. They call down the grace that is the essence of the nature of the divine. And you can experience them if only you surrender to the instruction of the greatest mystics of the world and realize that in this kind of radical simplicity, you have your greatest possible friend, your deep self. And when you connect with that deep self, you will not be afraid of opening to the madness and horror and lunacy of what's going on, because you know that there is something that lives in you that cannot be defeated, that cannot be shaken, that death itself will not destroy. You won't just have read this in books. You will know it, and you will know it viscerally with your whole being. And that changes everything.
Yes, I mean, this is, I can say that participating in my own sacred practices every single morning and in the evening before I go to sleep, that it infuses my being with this clarity that I'm connected to the divine, and the divine is working in me and through me. I'm one with the divine.
Yes.
And that empowers me to not become overwhelmed. Yes, I have great sorrow. However, to not become overwhelmed in these times where the earth is calling to us to take action. And that's what is so powerful about your work, is that you're saying to everyday people, friends, you have your place, you have your role. Here are simple practices to remind you of the power that is you and lives in you and through you, to give you the courage and the chutzpah and the tenacity to do your part, because we are in such important times.
Exactly. And you know the other great secret too, Mandy. It's one of the reasons why I love you and I'm so happy to be appearing on the show with you. And you know that the other thing that will really fortify you is to actually turn up and start doing something about something that you feel very passionately about. We're not called to address all the problems of the world and to save the whole world. We can't. We are all limited in our humanity. But we are all called to do something real about something that we really feel about. So you have decided to devote your life to creating grief centers. I've decided to devote my life to spreading the news and the information and the passion of sacred activism. Great friends that we know are devoted to other causes. They're all related. The thing that really saves a life is not only to do deep spiritual practice, but also to locate the cause that you cared most deeply about and start doing something about it, because you'll find that when you do, even if things are very grim on the outside, you will have a serenity and a peace and a joy that comes from truly turning up and honoring your obligation to humanity and God and the creation, and that will give you a secret joy even in the middle of terror and horror. This is something that the great prophets and the great mystics of humanity and the great shamans have always known. And it's not rocket science.
Right, right. Stay with us, friends. We'll be back.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
The 7 steps of grief and hope can be found at therespite.org on the Hope Is Now page. This is a video series that I had the honor and privilege of co-creating with my dear friend and colleague, Chris Saadi. This model, the model of heart-centered grief, is designed in 7 coaching sessions where you can stream or watch the DVD videos where Chris and I are coaching you through these incredibly powerful 7 steps to give you hope, and their practical ideas, creative ideas, to help you move through your grief journey in an inspired way, in a way with great dignity, and to support you through this difficult time in your life. Whatever your loss is, friend, the model of heart-centered grief is designed to empower you and encourage you on your journey.
Welcome back to Finding Hope. I'm your host, Counselor Mandy Epley, and today we are hearing from Andrew Harvey, and I'm just so excited that you all are having a chance to hear Andrew's passion, his practical suggestions for all of us to be empowered in our lives. One of the things that you said before we went to break is the importance of turning up and starting to do something about it, and that I can say for myself is that this great passion that I have around helping people in their grief, to see the majesty, to see the wisdom, to see the tools, you know, it's like, you know, our grief is a gateway into our own soul and a direction in our own calling. My passion around that is because we live in a time where people are shamed around their grief and shamed around their deep suffering, and really think they're supposed to close it up and shut it down, when that is actually the very gateway that takes us into this waking up. You know, I remember I listened to a recording of yours, the teachings on the great teacher and Sufi mystic Rumi, who Andrew Harvey, for those of you who don't know, is one of the world's experts on the great teacher Rumi. And you were saying that it's the time that we need to be having, you know, a break up, meaning, you know, waking up, allowing our hearts to be shattered and breaking up into service. And that can feel so frightening. And for those of you who are just tuning in, what we spoke about in the last segment is what are some sacred practices that you can do to support yourself, to strengthen you in your heartbreak, so that you will be able to stay strong towards your passion of service. And the last thing I want to say about that is that it's so true that if I'm not serving my call, I'm unhappy. I'm miserable. I've just recently had the great blessing to get married and to marry again. Thank you. And to really in a really amazing human being. And you know, no marriage, no person, you know, is going to fill me up. You know, no one is going to bring all this great joy to me. It's just so true that
it's a present
when
you give yourself, isn't it?
Yes, if I'm not in my calling, that is where our incredible. I mean, you know, my marriage is blessing me. I'm so grateful and all the gifts and blessings, but that's only a piece. That's only a piece of the incredible fullness of life.
Yes, because the role of a real marriage isn't to become a private cocoon that you separate yourself from the world in. Obviously, a real marriage provides deep peace and deep blessing and true satisfaction. But the point of that is to use that to become braver about following your calling in the world.
Yes. Amen. And that if I'm not following my call, and this is true for all of us, if we're not following our call, we cannot find the deep peace and joy that our hearts long for. So it's so paradoxically true. There's so much reason, friends, to allow yourself to grieve, because it's going to take you towards clarity of your passion, to ignite you towards your calling, and it's going to paradoxically bring you more joy in your life.
Well,
so,
I have
Andrew,
one more suggestion to try and help people be strong enough to grieve, because I know myself how immensely painful it is when you open to what's really happening and how chilling and terrifying it can be.
Yeah.
I have spread all over the world a vision that I had of what I call networks of grace, and that is groups of between 6 and 15 people who meet together to share their experiences, to share their pain, and to share their joy, and to come together to act together in their local communities. So another way of becoming strong enough to see things as they really are, to face things as they really are, is to start consciously collecting around yourself people who are willing to do the work with you.
Yeah.
I feel that is one of the great messages of our time. We're not called to do this work in solitary, alone ways. We're called to do this work as humble members of a whole community rising to take power back from the destructive powers that are now ruling the world. And we have to do it with fellow travelers, as crazy as ourselves, as flawed as ourselves, but as willing as ourselves to turn up and do something.
Yes. So the importance of community, the importance of support. I know
the importance of sacred friendship.
Yes.
This is a time in which friendship becomes the most luminous power in our lives.
Mm.
I couldn't live my life without my handful of absolutely committed, passionate, honest, naked, loving, serving friends who inspire me and who keep me true to my own mission. Really look around at the people in your life. Try and separate yourself from people who lower you, who depress you, who degrade you, who denigrate you, who repeat the sabotaging messages in your psyche, and look for people who are open-hearted and who are willing to share their emotions and bring them together and start inspiring each other, praying together, laughing together, drinking and eating together, but more importantly even than that, getting together to do something in your local community about what you care about. This is the way forward.
And friends, I want you to know, Andrew speaks about all of this in his book, The Hope. I can't tell you enough how much I know that will support you in your own clarity around this question of what can I do.
Well, so my book, The Hope, is my attempt to lay a map for the transformation of the planet and to really invite everybody to step up as a sacred activist and to give everybody all the tools that I know from my 40-year journey throughout many of the mystical traditions that can actually, practically, daily help. So it's not just a cry of the heart and an appeal to transformation. It is a map, and it is a real clear laying down, as far as I'm able, of how we can actually do this separately and together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's had a massive impact. At first, when it came out, everybody shrieked and shouted and said I was too radical. But now, 5 years later, it's being read all over the world, translated into different languages, because the time has come. I think I think people everywhere are waking up to the extremity of our situation and to the possibilities that that extremity offers us of really remaking the world to reflect compassion and justice instead of greed and chaos.
And what's so important is that, I mean, basically you were called through your journey to write The Hope regardless of the critics. You didn't, you know, you pushed back those voices in your own mind, internally and externally. And that is so important for our listening friends, that whatever your passionate call is, to push back the critics in your own mind and to push back and ignore the critics outside of you, and you listen to that wise divine consciousness within you. I mean, I think about that a lot. I mean, and it makes me giggle. I mean, no one wants to talk about these things, of course, and how important it is that we do. How important it is that we do, because the world needs us. Our children need us, our grandchildren, our unborn great-grandchildren, and on and on and on. They'll be saying our names with thanksgiving that we went for it, that we did not allow oppression to snuff out that inner voice and following our truth. When we come back, we're going to speak more with Andrew about his passion and about other things that are going on in the world. Stay with us. We'll be back.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. One of my mottos for business owners is, you can't do it alone. Whether you're in the startup stage of your business or you're scaling, you can't grow without relationships to provide support, wisdom, and new customers. eWomen Network is your home to connect with other women entrepreneurs who have been where you are or are experiencing the same challenges. We have chapters across the U.S. and Canada that have monthly events featuring our trademarked process called accelerated networking to ensure you get the contacts, resources, and leads you need to grow your business. And once you become a member, you get many benefits, including 2 one-on-one coaching sessions, unlimited access to our membership database, your own personal profile page, and discounts on products and services with our business partners such as UPS and American Express Open. Join the eWomen Network community and let us help you live your dream. For details, visit eWomenNetwork.com.
Counselor Mandy would like to offer you a free gift. As you've heard on her show, Finding Hope, she and Chris Saadi co-created the 7 Steps of Grief and Hope. She would like for you to have a free recording that includes an introduction to the 7 steps and takes a deep dive into Step 4, Paradox. In this recording, Chris and Mandy talk about how important it is to honor the grief journey. After listening to this recording, you will understand the importance of viewing your grief paradoxically, feel supported that you're not alone, and be inspired about how your grief can help others. To download this free recording, visit therespite.org. Just scroll down on the homepage to where it says, Hear about the transformational 7 steps of grief and hope, and click the Get Access button. It's that easy. Mandy's passion in life is helping people see that the losses in their life have meaning. We hope you'll accept this free gift from her. Again, visit therespite.org to get your free recording.
Welcome Welcome back to Finding Hope. I am your host, Counselor Mandy Epley, and I am speaking with Andrew Harvey today. And Andrew, one of the great terrors that's happening in the world is ISIS. And
yes.
I want to ask you to share what is on your heart about what's happening in the world around ISIS.
First of all, I think it's absolutely imperative that everyone understands that ISIS poses a threat as great as the Nazis. I think it's also very important that everyone understands that while we are threatened by climate change, our whole civilization, our whole world is threatened by climate change, we are also threatened to a similar and devastating extent by the terrorism that is now so sophisticated and so brilliant at using social media. We all know that there are hundreds of thousands of desperate, disaffected, perhaps millions of people all over the planet who are radically dissatisfied with how things are going. And ISIS's brilliance in reaching them and in recruiting them is a huge wake-up call.
Yes.
And it's very important also, and you know how much I love Islam, because the person, apart from Jesus, who has been central to my own evolution, is the greatest mystical poet of the world, Rumi, who was, of course, a Muslim and is the glory of the Muslim tradition. I've studied Islam. I've revered the authentic Islam all my life. I was born in India and introduced to the authentic Islam very early. And I've deeply dived into the Quran and into the great and extraordinary and noble and wonderful mystical tradition of the Sufis. So it's essential that everybody makes a very strong distinction between authentic moderate Islam and this terrible, stupid, vulgar, horrible, obscene, violent caricature of it. And that requires that everybody who is serious about truly understanding this phenomenon does a little bit of work and reads books that can help them understand the glory and the power of this major religion and help them support the moderate Islamic population in the States and also all around the world. Because as we all know, there is terror abroad, and certain unscrupulous elements in our culture are using that fear to do two things: to really put us again into a rabid militaristic trance, and also to use fear and terror to dissolve the very crucial liberties that we have guaranteed by the American Constitution. Yeah. Last night I watched the Republican debate. I'm not a rabid anti-Republican. I have many Republican friends. I honor certain very important tenets in the Republican vision, such as libertarianism, such as real deep freedom for people outside government control, such as in certain aspects of the free market and of competition. I think these are all very healthy forms of real conservatism. But I was absolutely appalled at Donald Trump's suggestion that we kill the families of terrorists as well, and even more appalled by Ted Cruz saying that we should carpet bomb the Syrian towns in which the rebels are, as if carpet bombing won't destroy hundreds of thousands of innocent lives, lives that are themselves now victims to ISIS aggression. We cannot afford this kind of crazy fear-based thinking. We have to do two things. What I'm wanting to do with a lot of other people is to write a letter to the president and say, look, you've shown astounding leadership over the climate talks. You've shown that you can rally the world. Now call an emergency conference of all the major world leaders, including, of course, the Gulf states and Saudi Arabia, the moderate, well, Saudi Arabia isn't, but the Gulf states have moderate aspects. Call them all together and say, look, we now need a active world coalition to snuff this evil out, because it threatens everything that we hold dear.
Yes. These are times where the fear one of the things that is so disappointing to me is how individuals are playing on the fear of, well-meaning church-going folk here in the South, well-meaning church-going folk around the United States of America, and people that know that that you know, shunning your brother is wrong. Know that violence against, you know, others is wrong, you know, inciting their fear, where these very same individuals are supporting acts of retribution for innocent Muslim people. I mean, there's a propaganda campaign going on right now that's not even understanding what the Muslim religion is about. And
right.
So what you're encouraging people to do is to read, is to discover for yourself.
And go and talk to Muslims, and talk to Imams who are absolutely against ISIS in the name of their own religion. Become aware, read the Quran, and you'll find that the Quran is filled with injunctions for peace, filled with injunctions for solidarity with people of other faiths, and filled with the most beautiful and holy and sacred advice. It's a great holy book. And the general Islamic population, and I've traveled a lot in Islamic countries, is appalled at ISIS, feels deeply that they do not represent in any way the meaning and truth of the Prophet or of the religion. This is essential now. And it's also important that people understand, and this is drives me crazy that people don't understand this, is that by reacting from fear and by talking about carpet bombing every Muslim and by talking about registering every Muslim and keeping out Muslims and immigration, we're playing into the hands of ISIS that wants to say, look, I told you so. America and the West are just concerned about their own religion, their own power, their own money, and they don't care about us and they hate us. Don't people see that reacting from fear actually plays into the hands of the most dangerous force that has been on the planet since the Nazis? If they don't see that, we're in for catastrophe. If more and more people wake up to that and really bring both knowledge of authentic Islam and a deep commitment to keeping our fundamental values intact, as the president keeps saying, then we can move together with the world to snuff this out, to rebuild the Middle East, to foment religious unity, and potentially to come together to birth a new humanity. This is a very important moment. It's as important in human terms as the climate change.
It is. It's as essential. I mean, I've been speaking with so many people about this, and I've had many people say to me around, you know, the hatred towards Muslim people, other Christian people, I happen to be a practicing Christian, saying to me, is this really happening? How can this be real? And we have to recognize that this is really happening. This is a very serious time, an opportunity for us to live solidly in our values, to behave from our values, and to act out through our faith and not through fear. Many of our listeners through eWomen Network are incredible women all over the nation, all over the world, who are great spiritual leaders themselves. And this is the time for women to really be the change that, I mean, the Dalai Lama said, it is going to be the Western women that change, that bring great change. The divine
feminine, I hear you, great change.
And it's time for, you know, for all of us to really understand what the facts are and what is being taught and not give in to the fear. Andrew, what is the second
thing? Don't make any mistake about my position. I feel that we do need to snuff ISIS out. I don't think this is going to be solved by dialogue. It, unfortunately, just as with the Nazis, it will have to be solved militarily. But it will have to be a worldwide coalition, and it will have to galvanize the Gulf states and really ask the moderate Islamic peoples to rise up with us against ISIS. Obama has won immense authority through what he's just accomplished in the climate change. This would be the most wonderful thing for him to take up. But But it cannot just be a Democratic involvement. It has to come also from the Republicans. And there are, thank God, some very intelligent Republicans who truly see that whipping up fear and playing on fear and instituting unconstitutional actions through fear is actually going to destroy our culture, our civilization, and not protect it.
Yes. In the couple of minutes we have left, Andrew, what is the second thing that you think that it's important for people to know? Is that the military action that must be taken?
I think that the most important thing is to understand that this is not a situation that can be solved without embracing a real military solution. And this is going to be difficult for many people because there's still this soppiness about evil in the spiritual world. And we cannot afford that. We have to make the distinction between moderate Islam and honor Islam and honor Islam's own rejection of ISIS. And but we do have to come together to ensure that this massive evil ends, because ISIS is brilliant, ISIS is ruthless, ISIS is sophisticated, and ISIS is now global. It's a cancer, and it has to be burned out. And that will require for all spiritual people to get real about the nature of evil in our world and to come to terms with it and to choose the unfortunate but necessary recipe of war now, but war carefully organized from every aspect.
Wow, Andrew, thank you for your words. Thank you for sharing your wisdom and your heart and for really imploring us to get going, friends, and to remember your grief is the key for your own personal sacred activism. To learn more about Andrew, you can find out about where Andrew will be speaking, where he'll be teaching, at andrewharvey.net. Thank you all for being with us. We'll see you next time on Finding Hope.
Look ahead to the distant horizon. See the phoenix all aflame.